Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You're listening to Real College Podcast. I'm Jake Maldonado, and for this week's episode, we have a special interview. I got to sit down with Sims from Doomtree. He just came out with a new album called More Than Ever. It came out on November 4th. We sat down, talked a little bit about the writing process, talked some politics, and talked about his catchphrase for a reality TV show. Without any further ado, here's the interview. So I'm here with Sims. Some of you might know him as Sims from Doomtree. He just came out with a new album, came out November 4th.
That's correct. Right.
It's called More Than Ever. At Radio K, we've been loving it. We've been playing it a ton.
Thank you.
So to begin, how was the writing process for this album in comparison to your other albums?
That's a big question in some ways. It was a little more focused. I wrote these songs in a shorter period of time. I kind of had started working on them in 2015, but really for the most part, they were all written from January to April in 2016. I had little pieces and stuff like that that I had kind of played around with the year before, but we were on tour all year with Doomtree doing all hands. So I don't really write on the road that much. It's hard for me to work on music or whatever. So I got home and I had the whole winter to work on stuff, and it was great. Every day I'd get up and just like set the intention of like, I'm gonna make a song today. Sometimes I wouldn't finish them, but that's okay. And it was freeing. I just made a bunch of stuff and I didn't care what it sounded like or, you know, what it was about or anything like that today. And, you know, and I was make so much stuff that I can go back and edit stuff and fix stuff later. But like the primary difference was that I didn't allow like the internal like critic and internal like editor into the room while I was creating something, which is a different approach than previously. Because I'm like, you know, like everyone else, like a little worried about like, oh, you know, like what is someone going to think about doing this? Or like, what if I said that? Like, you know, or like, oh, I don't want to be the type of person that would say something like this. Mm-hmm. And that's crazy talk. Like, it's you. Like, yeah, that's what you said. So right. I don't know. So real freeing. And I was able to just kind of like set out and just, you know, and go. And I think that there's songs on the record, like all the singles are like, you know, relatively standard, like bangers that we think people are going to listen to on the radio and stuff. But there's a lot of material on this record that's kind of like, it's like deeper and darker. But in a lot of ways, I think that like I got better as a rapper and as a songwriter at the same time. Like I can write a song that's about something from, you know, starting and ending and maybe have some resolution or something at the end of a song and still like have time for bars and patterns and all the fun stuff about rap to me. Like my favorite rappers just mm-hmm. rapping their butts off.
Right. Is there a specific song that was the most difficult for you to write off this album?
I mean, Brutal Dance was the hardest because the beat was like good.
Sliding through the belly, I do the brutal dance. Ride around like I stole it, my true romance. All day, let go the effort.
The rest of the beats I'm not saying, the rest of the beats aren't amazing. But that was one of those beats that you get and you're like, wow, this is good. I gotta make something good to this. And, you know, whatever, that came out or it didn't. But I turned that one in like last because I got that beat like over a year ago and just sat on it and made like four different songs to it, and they were all kind of meh, and this was the less meh of the whole batch of those four. Like I'm still not super pleased with it. I like it, but it's like whatever. The second, there was portions of songs that I like started and then stopped and then had to go back and fix, and like the back half of Voltaire was a little difficult to like set off, to like really step back into the mood of that song, because that's a really like time and place type of song. It's about, you know, it's a story song or whatever, so I had to pull myself back into the mode, and mm-hmm. that was challenging.
Yeah. Is there one song that just came pretty quickly to you, pretty easily?
Yeah. I mean, Icarus, I wrote that in my car. What else? Flash Paper was pretty quick. I wrote that one. I had been like, whatever. Here's some, I'm trying to get points with like Smarty Pants's. But like, I was reading a bunch of T.S. Eliot and I was like, oh yeah. And so that song's kind of based off the Hollow Men. Mm-hmm. And, so there's that. What else came quick? A couple of, like 100 I wrote in like 2 hours, which I never write that fast. And I just sent Beak like sent the demo back with a bunch of like gifs of like helicopters dropping like flame on stuff. It was great.
So do you usually start with lyrics? Do you start with a beat, or does it kind of depend on the
song? Like, I'll write like one-liners down and maybe four bars or something like that. In my phone, I have like a series of notes, but generally I like to start with the music and create words that fit the vibe of the music. And because ultimately I think what I'm doing is trying to write music and not like a poetry contest. And that's kind of like the distinction that I'm trying to go for in my head, where like sometimes I'll try to take something that I've written down previously and force it into a beat, but it doesn't maybe sonically behave the way that it should. And maybe you're not doing either of those two things justice by forcing them into each other. So I like to start with the music.
So how do you deal with that sort of like frustration? Because I imagine that writing a full album can get frustrating when mm-hmm. it's not melding well. How mm-hmm. do you keep from getting discouraged when you're struggling?
I mean, yeah, you just keep making stuff. Like, and you stop making stuff for a while, and then you're frustrated because you have no idea how you ever made anything before, and you're terrible, and like you have no idea how you ever made a song, and like all my good stuff is behind me. Like, all those feelings are real, and you just kind of push through it. Make a couple bad songs, and don't be afraid to make some bad stuff. That probably goes for anybody making anything. Like, if you want to be a creative for a job, you can't wait for the moment of inspiration to hit. You have to just force your way through it, and some days are just going to be less productive than others, and, you know, you can't hit home runs every time.
True. Yeah.
So I'm out here just trying to hit for average. Like, if you make, like, five songs... Let's say you make five songs a month. That's a lot of songs in a year. That's 60 songs a year. Like, 10 of them are good, and that's awesome. Then you got a good record.
True. So what were some... This album sounds pretty different from your other albums that I've listened to. And so were any of your influences for this one different than previous albums? Like, is there anybody in specific that you would say influenced you for this one?
Sure. I mean, like, I think that the beats that Icetep came with and that Paper Tiger came with and that Beak came with are just so different. I think that 5 years in listening to modern music and new music, which is like actually why I love Radio K, because I still find my new music through here, you know, amongst other places, but like I listen to Radio K in the car, and it's how I find great like tunes. And so yeah, like just being influenced by a ton of new music out here, it's great. And that's the primary thing. And also, we had to go sample free because we keep getting sued. So no more samples forever. So it's like kind of changes that like old school boom bap sound and the sampled sound and the dusty kind of feel to everything. We've had to exchange that and really relearn how to make stuff, how to make beats or whatever. And actually, I think you can kind of hear that on All Hands, like why that went to like, from No Kings to All Hands, there's a big sonic difference, and that's because we had to go 100% sample free because we keep getting sued. We get sued off stuff where, like, we didn't even make money on.
Yeah.
But it's whatever. Shout out to whosampled.com, you big snitch, you big dummy.
So as far as being part of Doomtree, mm-hmm. you guys all have a very different style of rap. Like, obviously, you guys... individually your stuff is different. How do you feel that working with so many amazing artists has influenced you as a rapper and a writer?
I mean, it's great. We get to draw off each other, and basically what it is I get to listen to all their stuff before it comes out. So and they get to listen to my stuff before it comes out, so we all have time to catch up. Because I feel like, I don't know, the next project that anybody does just continues to me to push the boundaries of the stuff that I like and the things that you can do. And so I'm fortunate to be with those people because I think that they're all really pushing the boundaries in different ways. Like I just heard POS's album the other day, and it's great and also pushes the boundaries. And it's way different for him. It's a different sounding record for him. Same as mine is a different sounding record for me. I think that that's been the biggest plus is the feeling of like freedom. Like none of this matters. So we're just going to do everything we want to do and like let people like it or not like it. But we'll be back next year with a different record, right. You know? And so just taking the pressure off yourself and freeing yourself up. So working with all those other people is great for that same reason. When we come together, that's when it becomes an insane, like, cluster F of trying to figure out how to fit all those voices into a song. And, you know, I think we've done a pretty good job of that. But it's, you know, that's the, like, evolving and everlasting challenge.
Fitting all of you guys into one track is, like...
And it's a lot of big personalities.
Yeah.
And a lot of big, like, different directions. Like, Cecil and Mike couldn't sound more different, you know.
Yeah.
Dessa and I probably couldn't sound more different. Like it's cool. That's what draws people to us or whatever.
Yeah, and you guys make it work, so I mean that's the good thing.
Hey, still out here.
So as far as sort of the local music scene, how do you feel that Minnesota has played a role in your career? Because most people probably wouldn't associate Minnesota with hip hop. But you've got a pretty rich hip-hop scene.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like the genre of hip-hop that we do, I think a lot of people were ready for that because of Rhymesayers and the work that they put down, Idea and Atmosphere and Ali and the rest of them. They put down so much groundwork for us to go out here and continue to tour and whatever. What's interesting is Minnesota now, like, we took what Rhymesayers did and made our own lane and made a different zone or whatever, and now there's like another lane still that's developing in Minnesota rap music that's more of like a mainstream lane, and that's really cool watching you know, Alan, Novion, Bobby, all those guys pushing it into a area that's a little more mainstream is really cool, and it's the new evolution of, you know, their sound and what this scene can do. And you know, the internet was the great equalizer for the whole world anyway. But we came up kind of in between those two times where Rhymesayers literally had to get in the van and just hop out there and build. We were in the middle. Like YouTube was what, 2005? Like I think we put our first stuff out in like 2002, something like that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, there were like demo tapes or whatever at the time, but you know, kind of learning how to utilize the internet and stuff. And then, yeah, I think that we're increasingly living in like a borderless world. You know, except for Trump's America, which will have a huge border on it. Gigantic, but we're not going to pay for that. So that's tight.
Yeah.
Yes. Wow, it's just good. It's just good. It feels good to know that we're going to have a gigantic wall.
Yeah, and we're not going to have to pay for it, which is pretty killer.
I'm not paying for it.
That's
killer. But I'm going to be rich, and I'm going to have my own reality show, and so are you.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's what I'm looking forward to the most.
Uh-huh. And you'll have your own catchphrase. Oh, it'll be so good.
I need to work on that.
You
then.
Do. Well, that's, you got time.
Do you
4 years,
do you
possibly
yours?
Eight.
Do you have yours?
Yeah,
ready?
It's lit. You're fired. It's lit.
Oh, that's good.
I'm just combining other people's catchphrases into my own.
Yeah, I don't know. Donald Trump might come for you if that's your
catchphrase. Oh, yeah. Totally. He's tweeting me.
Yeah.
Terrible, unpopular rapper, terrible rapper Sims. Nobody likes.
He doesn't know
failing
words.
Ratings.
Yeah.
Stole my catchphrase. What a dope.
That'll MAGA. Be good. I mean, I'm thinking that'll happen in the next 2 years,
man.
Is your feud with Trump, that'll be in the news.
But what a crazy, like, dystopian future present we have.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Was there a specific moment in your life when you knew that you wanted to be a rapper?
Nah, not really. I mean, I was in bands when I was 14, 15, 13. I mean, I was making songs at 3 years old. I guess having my dad film me, you know, playing on the SK-1, making songs that I was, you know, obviously making up. But I think I just love making songs my whole life. And then at like 16 or 17, I started you know, freestyling and writing like real good poetry, real good, solid 16-year-old boy poetry. It was real, real good.
When can we expect that to come out?
Man, that's in the lost tapes. I got a whole series. Yo, I should find those tapes though. There's like, there's a series of tapes from 16, 17, 18. Which is what blows my mind about some of these young dudes out here that are 16, 17, 18 years old, and how, like, how good Spooky Black or Corbin, how good that dude is at 16 or 15 when he put that song out. I was like, dang, you sure heard what I was doing at 15? It was crazy. It was literally like, anyway, yeah, I don't know. Then I just started kind of, it just kind of went from there. I just started recording songs and whatever. I met Steph. Like, I knew Steph from junior high, but then he kind of bounced around a bit, and then I saw him again. Like, I was getting beats from him at like when I was like 18, and then just recording at his house and whatever, and then we just kept it going.
That's awesome. Do you have any tips for people who are young and want to go into music?
For sure. I think that, like, a few things. Like, I've been doing this professionally for like 11 years, and I don't expect it to be the next 11 years, and that's cool with me. I think that thinking of music as this is going to be my career, this is going to be my job, might be a bit of a mistake, and it might be like, it might behoove you to detach yourself from the result of I'm going to be a millionaire famous musician, or I'm going to be a thousandaire well-respected whatever musician. And detach yourself from that whole result, and then say, like, what if I don't make it at all? What if only 100 people listen to my SoundCloud for the next 10 years? And then if your answer is like, I still would do it and I still want to make music, then go forth. And like, but carry that attitude with you that, like, you know, your intention is big, and why you're doing what you're doing is big. And I think that people see that and people recognize that. And it helps you create the most pure version of your art. And so that's like my big advice would be just stay true to yourself and don't worry about the results and just keep pushing the envelope for yourself of making the best possible product. And then worry about the rest later. And if you don't, if you still have to have a job, that doesn't mean you're a failure. It means that you are like 99.5% of the professional musicians, or like, not professional, I guess, but musicians who you heard of. Like, there's bands that you know that tour and they play First Avenue and they got jobs when they go home. So don't sweat it. For the music people out there, I'd recommend getting a graphic design degree. You know?
Yeah.
And you can design your own album artwork, pick up freelance jobs.
Yeah, and the album artwork for this, for More Than Ever, is awesome. And like,
thank
the music
you.
Video for 100 is just
bonkers.
One of the like craziest things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I just show it to people and they're like, what? But in like
a
good way. Good way.
It's good. Like, every day when I was writing songs, I would start just by looking at Tumblr and like This Is Colossal and other places of, like, you know, gathering images that I liked, and I would just record or, you know, save them to a folder. And when it came time to do the artwork, Andy Lund and I just went through a bunch of stuff that we had, and we put together like a mood board, and then we kind of just, you know, refined it until we got to a place where we decided, you know, to like stylize these photos. And then we shot the video based on those photos. That was Isaac Gale and his insane, awesome mind. Isaac Gale's from Death Squads and shoots a bunch of videos, and he's the greatest.
Yeah, and it's not like what you would usually see for like a rap album. You wouldn't see like a pink cover with gold.
Or like a guy in like a silk floral jacket that
right.
you know, like a bomber jacket. Like, I don't know, man. It's disarming, and that's what we kind of wanted to do. We wanted something that was like, I don't know, man. What are we gonna do? We're gonna like sit in front of a graffiti wall again? Are we gonna like do like a Urban Decay type photo shoot or whatever? Like, the tropes are so played that now it's time to do something different. And the indie rock world's been like, this is not a stunning cover for like whatever, let's say indie rock record or whatever, but for a rap record it's a stunning cover in some way. It's like, whoa, pink.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Hypermasculinity is over.
It's overrated.
It's done.
I agree.
Whatever. Enjoy your truck nuts.
Is there anything else that you want to say about?
Yes. I want to talk about a lot of stuff, mostly my feelings about my show at First Avenue on January 6th at First Avenue. It's my first time throwing my own solo headlining show there, which is crazy.
Wow.
And feels great. And I'm excited for that. I have Webster X from Milwaukee, who is so rad. And if you guys aren't playing him, you should be playing him because he's so rad. He's got a whole crew of people down there in Milwaukee that's great. And we got Air Credits from Chicago, which is Show You Suck and the Hood Internet's new like collaborative duo, which is about, it's a record about the dystopian future. It's like rap from the future. It's a concept album.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, hilarious. The more that we continue, the more it seems like you guys wrote about like a week from now. But those guys are so awesome. They're on tour with me right now, and they're just killing it every night. And then we have Nazim and Spencer Joles, who are some local dudes who are just awesome too, and up and coming, and got mad love for them. So it's a good bill. I think from top to bottom, it's going to be a crazy fun night. Like I worked really hard on making sure that everyone has a great show. I've seen all their shows, and you know, I took notes. Just kidding. I took mental notes because I'm trying to, I don't know. I just wanted to put the best party together. So that's what we have on January 6th at First Ave. You can get tickets at doomtree.net or other places.
Right. And then speaking of tour, your van got broken into.
It did.
And where was
that? That
was lame. Yeah. Where was that?
That was in Carroll Gardens, New York, which is like in Brooklyn, which is like, it's basically like farm to table strollerville. Like it's, you know, people were doing free range yoga outside. Like it's like not one of those neighborhoods. Like it's not some wild area. And we've been staying there, been leaving stuff there, but whatever. Somebody busted into the van and stole a bunch of stuff, and we got some of it back. And then the rest we put on a GoFundMe, and it got funded in 20 hours, which was just like overwhelming. The feeling that I got when we were able to replace everybody's gear like right away, it's just like, I don't know, it felt humbling. And like it was humbling having to ask and start a GoFundMe. There are like huge causes out here, very worthy causes, and it's hard to like swallow your pride and be like, cool, mine is a worthy cause too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some really dumb GoFundMes, and I've kind of vowed like I'm not doing that. So it was humbling to have to ask, but I felt just overwhelming amount of joy and pride, and like, you know, I got a little emotional about the fact that like, wow, man, you know, people can come together for you and give $10 or whatever amount of dollars, and it really does add up quickly. And so, yeah, the sense of community that we felt that day was unreal. And I just hope that everyone gets to experience not necessarily losing a bunch of stuff and then getting money
right.
back, but like experience that sense of community that we felt that day. And it was kind of like, you know, just another sign to just, no matter what, if things are going great or if things are going less than great, you know, just like focus back on those little cornerstone moments and like, you know, harness something from that and move forward with like a bunch of joy in your heart, because amazing stuff out here happens all the time. And if you focus on the like terrible things that have happened, like someone broke into our van, people are terrible, da da da, I hate people. Like we never felt that way. I never felt that way at all. It was like, oh man, that's terrible. I felt terrible for Mark Maker, who got all his beats stolen. Like he never leaves his laptop in the car, and he did that night because he's a dummy. But I felt terrible for him because he lost his music. But the rest of the stuff, it was like, whatever. Like we hope that whoever took this like benefits off of it as much as we lost from it. Because your life sucks. You're rolling around stealing stuff from vans.
Yeah.
Like you got nothing going on. So I hope that you really hit the jackpot on this stuff. And meanwhile, like we weren't mad. It was just like, it's just like dumbfounding and stupid. And we're just like, man, bummed out is what it really was.
Yeah, and you guys played a show the next day.
The same day.
The same day the same that day. It got stolen.
Yeah, in Philly.
So how did you...
So I was like sitting with the NYPD all day, which shout out to you guys not doing a dang thing. I was sitting with them all day. Like, yo, and we... So like the Hood Internet's lights got stolen. He made those lights. Like he spent like $10,000 on making them and then spent like 100 hours on making them. Like, thank God somebody called. Like there was a number on the box and it got around back to the Hood Internet. And when we were standing with the cops filling out the police report, like, oh, yo, they called. We have the lights. And the cops were like, oh, good, you found the lights. You guys going to, like, get an Uber up there? Or? And we were like, I was like, yeah, I guess, you know. Then we found the iPad 2 days later because we have, like, the tracking numbers on it. Right. And they're talking about, like, yeah, we can't go get that for you. And like, oh, really? It's at the same corner that the lights were found. And like, you know, and like, oh, you're going to have to be there in person to come get your iPad. And yeah, I don't know. As far as like the Doomtree, like fans and squad just being there for us and holding us down, like that's rad. And that's like, I don't know, that's more than I could ask for and anticipate. But I feel like in some ways, like, you know, we get each other through a lot of different stuff. And, you know, like we make songs for you to be there in weird moments in your life. And you guys are there in weird moments of our lives. And it's like super rad to have these like communal experiences. And I think that that's what we do at the show too, is we try to make like a community about it, you know?
So aside from having the stuff taken from your van, what's mm-hmm. been kind of the craziest moment of tour so far? Because you've been touring for a while
like
now.
We were on tour for like 2 weeks. Then we had the holiday off, Thanksgiving off. And then now we're back out for the next 3 weeks. But the craziest thing was Donald Trump is the president.
Yeah.
That was by far the craziest thing that happened while I was gone. And that was by far the craziest thing that has happened.
Well, that's at least...
if you're a Trump supporter, that's fine. That's cool. But to me, I'm shocked.
And we live in a liberal state. We live in a liberal... You know,
and you go to a very liberal university.
Right. Yeah, and so it's like, I'm like, I can't even imagine people who are out there living in rural areas.
In Mississippi or whatever.
Right. I'm like, I'm lucky to live here. And
just move here. If you live somewhere that really sucks, move to the Twin Cities. We got a great radio station. We got a great college. We got great hip-hop music.
Yeah, we've got the best hip-hop
music
around.
You guys can move into my basement for 2 to 3 weeks till you get your spot. Holler at me. You heard it here first.
Yeah, that's a
Hit
real
me on
offer.
Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah, but I was listening to your interview with Peter Parker.
Uh-huh.
And he sort of pointed out the fact that like a lot of your music is pretty political, but not so much on this album.
Yeah.
But in light of everything that's been going on lately, has that sort of sparked anything in you?
I mean, we'll see what happens. I think that I'm like in the same boat that a lot of people were like the last 3 or 4 years, like bored with politics and over it and whatever. Like I was more like thinking on a local level, you know, like going down to the 4th Precinct and stuff and hanging out during the Jamar Clark thing. And I don't know. It's been like my focus has been more on like local politics stuff, mm-hmm. but at the same time, it seems like now we're going to have to, you know, America's got to wake back up and stay woke, because you can't, you know, I feel like the attempts to already like calm your emotions down and normalize things and you know, the big phrase is normalize Trump or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's an active strategy, not out of any kind of like malice, like from the media, but man, it's, like, you got to stay really engaged, I think. And we have to be reading these articles and we have to be, like, demanding more out of our politicians because they're not doing much.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to have them do more.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff to do right now. But I think as far as music goes, I don't know. I think I've played that note.
So just more so like activism at this point.
Yeah, I think for me it's like actually being in my community and actually doing stuff.
Right.
Rather than like making the songs to it is cool, but I think that doesn't really do as much for me personally at this point. Mm-hmm. What I feel like I need to be doing and should be doing. Yeah, I feel like it's more getting out and be, you know, maybe if I have a platform, like then asking Amy Klobuchar and, you know, Keith Ellison about what their plans are for police reform in Minnesota and right. starting that process.
Yeah.
And maybe, I don't know, whatever I can do to help things like that. I can't deal with it in its entirety. I think that maybe it's about like taking bite-sized pieces and dealing with those, but staying aware of the entire picture and not going to sleep about it and, you right. know, chilling back into Netflix
yeah.
the entire time. Netflix is dope, but true. And a very good diversion from all this other stuff, but this stuff is important.
Thank you so much for yes. coming. I really, really appreciate it. Tried to keep my cool as a
you're
big fan.
You're doing awesome.
Thank
this
you.
Is great.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.